So we'll call that your semi-woo, because there's evidence, but it's just not, you know, Western scientific right. medical literature.
Right. It's my partial woo.
Your partial woo.
Borderline is born pseudo woo.
I was just going to say there's pseudoscience, so let's just make the term pseudo woo. Oh,
pseudo woo. Hi, Tina.
Hi, Leia.
How you doing?
I'm doing great today. How are you doing?
I'm well. I should have asked how to sleep last night.
I know. I actually thought you would lead with that. So I was ready.
Oh, how'd you sleep last night?
I slept really well. I woke up well rested, if a little early, but still well rested. Maybe I fell asleep a little earlier than usual. So that makes sense.
Nice.
How about you?
Oh, we won't go there.
So it's now 11 a.m. as we record, or 11:45. And so I'm going to guess you've been up for at least 7 hours?
Possibly.
Ooh. That's an early rise.
I know what's going on. I just got to fix it.
And that's what we're here for, right? Is
to help that's why we're here.
Understand what's going on. And, you know, you can't solve a problem until you can define it. So hopefully we'll help people do that.
Okay, let's just cut to the chase. We're talking about sleep. We're picking up where we left off. What works integratively?
Yeah. So integratively, you know, what we do, we look at that list of causes that I went through. And there might be some more on there, of course, that we haven't talked about. But we really, really ask people in detail. We try to figure out the cause. And that is what we gear the naturopathic treatment towards. So sleep hygiene, which you and I have already talked about, is kind of the basis. That's the foundation of everything we might do with a patient. Make sure all those parameters are in place.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what we need to go to sleep. I mean, that's just biology. Right, you need it to be dark. You want blue light suppressing your melatonin production. You know, these are the basic. Just get all the obstacles out of the way that might lead to poor sleep, and then we identify the cause.
Yeah. So you mentioned, we keep mentioning melatonin. Why don't you tell us about melatonin and when and how to use it? I mean, there is a time and a place for melatonin. It's not for everyone.
Yeah. So melatonin. There's a couple ways of using melatonin, right? First of all, there's decent evidence that shows that melatonin, somewhere in the range of 3 to 6 milligrams before bed, can be useful. Now, when to take it depends on whether you want to fall asleep or stay asleep. Is your problem that you wake up between midnight and 2, or is it you lay in bed awake until midnight or 2? One thing to know is that melatonin peaks about 2 hours after you take it. So you want to time the time you take the melatonin dose for sleep a couple hours before you think you need it. So if you don't sleep through the night, you would take it just before you put your head on the pillow so that you help your body peak at its normal melatonin peak. In adults, that is around, it should be around 2 a.m. If you have trouble falling asleep, you might take it an hour, hour and a half before you even put your head on the pillow, knowing that that will help you get there, along with all the other things we talked about, right? All the sleep hygiene measures. Melatonin is what's considered the master hormone of our internal clocks. Our circadian rhythm is set by light and dark. It's also set by feeding and fasting. So that's how our bodies know whether to fall asleep or be awake. So you want to follow the natural rhythms with that. And that includes when people take melatonin. Melatonin is our signal that it's dark. So you want to take this only at nighttime. You don't take melatonin in the morning.
I learned where melatonin is what tells your body to prepare to sleep.
Yeah. So like this is the all systems down, you know, it's like those dolls when we were little and their eyelids would go over their eyes when you put them horizontal and they'd open their eyes when they're vertical.
Oh, that's just creepy.
Well, they were a little bit creepy. That's just because there was bad movies made out of such dolls.
But yeah, so it's like a signal to your body to start to wind down. But yeah, in terms of people who work
swing shift,
right? Yeah, taking melatonin when you get off work at, you know, 6, 7 a.m. That's not the time and place to take melatonin.
No, that's not ideal. The swing shift aspect is actually considered a probable human carcinogen, according to the International Agency for Research on Cancer, which is part of the World Health Organization. I'm saying this because shift work, not just nighttime shift, but shift work where they shift it. You know, sometimes you're in the daytime, sometimes you're at the nighttime. That's probably the worst thing we can do for our biology, for our circadian rhythms, because there's no set time of waking and sleeping. And it does increase the risk of several different types of cancers. If someone was on a night shift, and it's the same night shift day after day, what that person should do ideally is keep that on their days off as well.
Right.
And that's not easy to do. Biologically, that's the best thing to do. But I know from a practical standpoint, that's not easy to do.
And there are studies that show that shift work is associated with a higher rate of heart disease. It's a risk for diabetes, a greater risk of weight gain.
Yeah. And given that weight gain and blood sugar abnormalities are a risk for cancer, that could be part of the link to night shift work.
Yeah. So for my patients that do shift work, or just basically for my patients where, you know, they don't tolerate melatonin, or, you know, for whatever reason, they can't take it, I recommend using a sleep eye mask.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. So they can make as much melatonin as possible in their own body.
Yeah. And that's what I tell them. I just tell them, like, you know, you can't take it, you know, as a pill, but, you know, let's work on getting your body to support it. And honestly, especially with the patients who hate taking pills, the sleep eye mask has been a godsend for some people.
Yeah. Yeah. On that note, I want to just explain to whoever's listening that the production of melatonin in the body is a downhill slope, where serotonin, the neurotransmitter serotonin, goes on to become melatonin due to an enzyme in between there. And that enzyme is inhibited by light. And so I call it a downhill slope because in the daytime, the reason we're not producing melatonin generally is because there's light hitting the back of our eye and keeping that enzyme from being active. As soon as you withdraw the light, the ball rolls downhill. Serotonin can then become melatonin naturally because that's what it wants to do. And on that note, melatonin does not have any kind of negative feedback. So when we produce it or when we take it orally as a supplement, there's no such thing as reducing our own production of melatonin because you're taking it orally. That doesn't exist because it would need what's called a negative feedback loop for that to happen. And so I just want to be clear because I think it's a...
I hear that a lot. I hear patients say, oh, I don't take melatonin because it, you know, your body stops producing it if you take it. And I'm like, no, that's not really how it works.
No, that would be true of other things that do have negative feedback loops, because that literally means your body says, oh, we're producing plenty of that, so I'll shut down the enzyme pathway to make it now.
Right.
And that is what's called a negative loop, right? So you've got plenty of a given compound. The enzyme senses that there's plenty around, and then it doesn't produce anymore. Melatonin doesn't have that. That's why I call it a ball rolling down a hill. There is no stopping melatonin production when the lights are off, unless the enzyme isn't working or its cofactors like a B vitamin isn't present, then the enzyme may not work, because that's what B vitamins often are. They're cofactors that are necessary for an enzyme to function.
Or even low serotonin, right?
Or even low serotonin. Yeah. If you're low in serotonin, it's hard to make melatonin. Exactly.
Besides melatonin, there are other reasons for not sleeping. So how do we go about finding them?
So in finding the cause, there are different supplements, and often I go a lot to plant medicines when it comes to helping people fall asleep, because it's very reliable. What plants I use depends on how I assess the cause of the sleep disruption. So let's just talk about, let's talk about stress or anxiety, right? That's a common reason to either have trouble falling asleep, or you wake up in the night and your brain turns on and you start.
Right. You just can't stop reviewing your day or, you know, your next day. Yeah.
Yeah. And so anti-anxiety plants are indicated for that person, right? So you don't need to do a sedative plant. A sedative plant might be something like skullcap, which is
Scutellaria.
Scutellaria lactiflora.
How did I know that?
Well, I can't get lactiflora out of my head. I'm like, what's the first? Oh yeah. Scutellaria, not bicalensis. Scutellaria lactiflora. And that's a sedative plant, which is fine to put in a formula of several plants together, but you really are going to want to do something that lowers anxiety. And that might be things like passion flower or hops. For some people, it might be something like even kava kava root is an anti-anxiety, but it's also a muscle relaxant. So if someone has a level of muscle pain or any kind of pain, kava kava is more likely to be in their formula.
Okay, so addressing kava kava, there was something that came out many years ago about kava kava that has kind of, I don't want to say soiled it in the eyes of some conventional doctors if they see that you're taking kava kava. And so what was that about?
That was contamination in an isolated product out there.
And it kind of gave the whole herb a bad name.
Oh, yeah. It sure did. It was profound. It was pulled off the shelves even. It turned out to be contamination. And you have to know that traditional use of kava kava root, like in Tahiti and Polynesian islands, it's drank like we drink coffee. It's not considered at all kind of a powerful plant in that sense. It's relaxing, it's anti-anxiety, but it's not considered kind of a powerful botanical. Kava kava in isolate, I don't recommend it in capsules. I do think that tinctures are okay because it's just the root in the tincture. There's no other reason to put anything else in the tincture, or the root ground up, or the tea. And the tea can be a little bit numbing on the lips.
Right. The tincture would be too, right?
Yeah. It's a little bit numbing effect, but it's not a horrible effect.
Which might work with other side
exactly.
effects you got going on.
Be desirable.
Where would you put lavender? That would be kind of an anti-anxiety.
I would put lavender. It's emotional support and anti-anxiety. But what's interesting is you can say that of a lot of the blue flowers. So vervain is in there as well. Another great one that's gentle like lavender is chamomile. And
right. And that's again, that is, I think, what most people hear of is, oh, chamomile tea before bed.
Yeah. And you know, what's great is you can do it as a tea, and the aroma is important too. I mean, when you do it, put your face over your cup and smell the vapor, because part of the medicinal component is going up in the steam, and you can actually get it through your nose, through the olfactory route.
I do recommend when people brew themselves a cup of tea to cover the teacup with a saucer as it's steeping, mm-hmm. you know, for the 4 minutes or however long it steeps, just to kind of keep all of those essential oils in there. An issue mm-hmm. I've always had with having these teas is you make sure that you do drink them a couple hours before you go to bed, because you will be waking in the middle of the night to have to pee.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Another one of my favorite anti-anxiety plants is lemon balm.
Mm.
Lemon balm is really a nice anti-anxiety. It's also antiviral. So in my world of, you know, seeing people when they're going through treatment, your immune system is often suppressed. So doing something that has an antiviral effect, especially if we're in cold flu season or, you know, there's reasons to bolster the immune function. Lemon balm is really pleasant. It's pleasant to drink. It's very easy to grow. It's in the mint family. So it literally grows like a weed. So this is one of my favorite ones to use. And passion flower, I think, is unique in its ability to calm down the brain. It's literally for erasing thoughts. You know, that's passion flower's kind of claim to fame. Another sedative that's reliable is California poppy. It's a really nice... No, it's... California poppy can be... This is not opium poppy. California poppy is not opium. Just so we're clear, California poppy is a medicinal plant.
Hey, I've watched Ozark. I know all about this stuff.
But it's a straight sedative, but it can be really nice in conjunction with other things that are either pain relieving or anti-anxiety, because it's a sedative plant.
And an important thing that I learned when learning about herbal medicine is herbal medicine isn't something that, like, the same herb is not something that you use every single night or every single day for your entire life. You take breaks from mm-hmm. using these. And so that's a nice way to kind of maybe rotate through these different mm-hmm. teas or herbs for sleep is, you know, if you find something and it works for you all the time, take a break from it for a while.
Well, and you can start by just looking down the aisles. I mean, there's a lot of these plants that are just can be gotten as single herb teas mm-hmm. just in a grocery aisle. I often advocate for people to double up the pack and maybe lower the water amount. So 4 to 6 ounces and a couple tea bags to make a good, strong, a medicinal tea is generally a little stronger than just one for taste. So generally speaking, my experience has been that when these things don't work, it's because they're underdosing it. They don't take enough of it to actually have a medicinal effect. It's like taking a baby aspirin when you have a whopping headache, right? It's not going to work.
I want to, speaking about very small doses, I'm going to add one in. It's more of a spice than an herb. It's mm-hmm. nutmeg. So nutmeg is used in Ayurveda to help with sleep. And at high doses, it can be kind of hallucinogenic, actually.
Yes,
I think kids were kind
of, that's what I hear.
The kids were mm-hmm. doing nutmeg. But if you just add a pinch of nutmeg to your tea, or if you have, you know, if you do the classic warm milk at night, or have mm-hmm. golden milk, whatever, you know, you're drinking at night, just add a pinch of nutmeg, and that can help with sleep.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't advise going over a pinch. If it doesn't seem to work, maybe your nutmeg's old and go get some fresh nutmeg.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, because a lot of these plants, we're talking about the essential oils, which do degrade mm-hmm. over time. And essential oils can also be used in a diffuser. So if you want to just diffuse the lavender into the room or the chamomile into the room, that's fine. I mean, I'm going to put a caveat to the chamomile, and that is some people have allergies to ragweed, and sometimes that can cross
sure.
over and be allergic to chamomile. And that's true of any plant. Let's just get that out there. These are plants, and when you're talking about plants, people can be allergic to the entire families of plants. So I'm going to put that caveat out there. Just always go slowly. We didn't mention valerian.
No, that's kind of the...
Valerian's kind of top of the list for a lot of people.
Right.
Interestingly, I don't use a ton of valerian. I know it can have a calming effect. It's good for restlessness. Kind of, it's one of its claims to fame is, like we were talking about, restless legs and feeling restless. Valerian is for that specifically. And sometimes it's combined with that kava to, you know, have even more potent effect as an antispasmodic in the muscles, you know. So the thing to know about valerian is there is some people, and this is probably why I don't use it, because I don't know who they are. About 10 or 15% of people who take valerian have a paradoxical effect. So instead of helping them sleep, it actually keeps them awake. And there's so many plants to be used for sleep. I always went around it for that reason.
And it smells horrible. It's
absolutely
like nasty smelling.
Oh yeah. When you're walking, when I walk trails in the Northwest, you can literally be walking trail like, there's valerian nearby. Like, it smells so bad.
Oh really? Oh, I've never smelled it in the wild. I just know that, like, if it's in a sleep formula, you're like, oh, this is just gross. It also, it acts kind of the same way that Valium does.
Yes.
And so is there a risk of dependency with it?
I would imagine so. But again, you know, it's funny because it's probably the one of the oldest and most well-known sedative plants out there. And for those reasons, I've just always avoided it. And I did often do tinctures, to your point of it tasting horrible. Mm-hmm. A lot of what I do to dose plant medicine so that people can titrate the dose down or up, I'll do tinctures and customize them for people often. And valerian tastes so vile. I just never would want to do that to anybody, right? So, so that's probably another reason I didn't use them much. Yeah,
yeah, it's pretty nasty and hard to cover that taste.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other sedative herbs, right? That aren't so nasty. And okay, I'm going to ask a lot of questions about herbs because I don't remember anything about studying herbs because I didn't really use them when working at the hospital.
Well, that makes sense. Yeah. Because in a hospital setting, there's so many interactions that could happen with plants that generally speaking, the pharmacist and the hospital staff doesn't really want you using a lot of plant medicine alongside drugs.
Right. So if anyone's wondering, how come Leia doesn't know about herbs? That's why. Because I don't use them. But okay. So more palatable sedative herbs would be what?
Well, we've already mentioned California poppy. We mentioned Skullcap. Mm-hmm. Both of those are much better tasting. Another one that's reliable is catnip.
Ooh. Mm-hmm.
Catnip leaves. And Lactuca verosa, or better known as wild lettuce. That's also sedating. And then there's other reasons. Like, you, that's for people who need a sedative plant. But sometimes, you know, if what's keeping you up is discomfort, pain, neuropathy, that kind of thing.
Right.
Might use other plants to target that. And again, I usually put several plants together. I usually don't use a single. I usually am doing a couple of things at least. But the top candidates that come to mind, of course, top of mind is turmeric.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Turmeric root is really, really nice anti-inflammatory. And this is not meant to be a sedative. It's meant to lead to an anti-inflammatory effect, right?
But I find when I drink my golden milk at night, that I actually do become sleepy drinking it. And I'm using like almond milk or oat milk. Mm-hmm. So there is perhaps by just lowering the inflammation.
I think it's the warm milk, the classic.
Even if it's almond.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I think it's the warm drink.
Nice.
Yeah. I mean, as far as having an actual sedative effect. Now that said, I suppose, you know, you could say there could be some effect on the brain that's calming and in it being an anti-inflammatory systemically, right? So turmeric or even curcumin. Now curcumin is the active, well, one of the active ingredients in a turmeric root. Turmeric root is the whole plant, and you make you can make that into a tea or the milk that you're talking about. And somewhere between 4% and 6% of the turmeric root is curcumin, or curcuminoids to be exact. There's three curcuminoids, but we use the term curcumin to include all three of them generally. So a lot of people will take curcumin as a capsule for their anti-inflammatory effect too. So just so we're clear on what's what, because they're not interchangeable. Turmeric root contains 4% to 6% curcumin.
And I typically recommend for people to do something like make golden milk or add it to sauces. And, you know, I tend to use the food more. And I guess we should, for people who don't know golden milk, mm-hmm. I can throw a recipe up on the mm-hmm. show notes, just
good
a link
idea.
To the recipe.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of a nice relaxing drink that you can, you know, the nutmeg that I mentioned, you could add a little sprinkle on before bedtime.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, the other thing you can add to the golden milk, especially if there's a mood issue towards depression or melancholy, is saffron. Just a couple, you know,
threads.
A couple threads of saffron on there to let it soak in, and no harm in drinking that either. But you can add that to the golden milk to kind of up the ante if you need a little bit of that. And the other reliable anti-inflammatory kind of pain-oriented botanical that I use is Boswellia.
I love that. And we would recommend that for patients, especially for people who had pain from the aromatase inhibitors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Boswellia is such a nice plant. It crosses the blood-brain barrier. So Boswellia can be good for anti-inflammatory, for pain anywhere in the body. And both of these, I'd probably be more likely to be using them or recommending them to people to be used throughout the day. Right. So they might take Boswellia in the morning and Boswellia at night. And they're just, what we're trying to do is drive down the inflammatory process and drive down their pain as an anti-inflammatory, but it doesn't have the same side effects as some of the non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs out there, like, you know, Advil and those things.
Right. The stomach issues. I do want to point out one thing, which I don't think we've mentioned, is when taking a sedative or an herb that is, you know, it's a sedative. So if you are taking something, whether it's an opioid or another type of pain medication or any sort of, you know, pain medication with the same effect, there is cumulative action.
Mm-hmm.
So to be cautious and not to just assume that these are safe because they're natural, but if you're already taking something that, you know, there's a label on it warning you of impairment, these can add to that.
Yes. Yeah. There can be a cumulative effect when you add herbs on top of herbs, if you don't know the mechanisms of action. And also especially when you add plants to medications, now that's where you start to get in more likely interactions that potentiate each other, that you may not wake up so rested, or, you know, it's not advised.
And so with natural agents, there also are other supplements that are used.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
My favorite being theanine, kind of riffing off that that active mind, mm-hmm. you know, trying to just kind of calm the what is it, like the drunk monkey brain? Yeah. Or I forgot what it's called. There's a...
Yeah, the monkey
there's
mind.
There's a word for that. The monkey mind. Well, yeah,
there is actually a study that's interesting that you say it just like that, because there's a study that showed that when people took L-theanine, I believe the dose was 200 milligrams, they could see that the alpha brain waves were increased. And the alpha brain waves are what we are trying to accomplish when we do meditation or deep relaxation. And so the L-theanine is promoting alpha waves. So to your point.
And L-theanine is derived from green mm-hmm. tea. And so green tea has these properties, which is kind of neat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my understanding, and I've never visited Japan, and maybe I should ask a friend who was just there not too long ago. My understanding is that green tea in general, whether it's sencha or another form in Japan, is traditionally drank, like they'll put the fresh leaves in the pot in the morning, which have the most caffeine in the first extractions, and they re-extract those same leaves a few times throughout the day. And as the day goes on, there's less caffeine extracted and more L-theanine.
Well, and that's what I learned in my training was mm-hmm. that, you know, if someone's trying to limit their caffeine, to kind of throw out that first cup and then just keep reusing the tea bag. Mm-hmm. So that's very similar to what I learned.
Oh, that reminds me, you know what else can interfere with falling asleep and staying asleep, and we make it endogenously, is cortisol.
Oh, sure.
Cortisol is the hormone we make to wake up bright-eyed and bushy-tailed in the morning. But if we have too much of it circulating at night when we're trying to sleep, whether it's to fall asleep or we have a spike in the night, you're going to wake up with that morning wakefulness, and that makes it difficult to sleep.
Right. So if someone's waking up around, you know, 3:30 or something every single night, it might be due to a sudden spike in cortisol.
Yes. And generally speaking, there's two reasons that cortisol would be too high at night. One is stress, anxiety, kind of that restlessness of your sympathetic nervous system, which is your fight or flight state. And the other,
which is going through cancer treatment. Like, I mean, that just, the minute you're diagnosed, hello.
Right. Right. This is, yeah, that's the challenge, right? And the other reason besides stress, anxiety is blood sugar.
Mm-hmm.
If blood sugar goes too low, it's a natural physiological reaction to create cortisol, which will then bring glucose into the bloodstream so you can continue to function. If that happens just before bed, if it happens in the middle of the night, and it does happen quite a bit in the middle of the night for people, if blood sugar goes too low, your body has to create cortisol so that the glucose gets normalized. And with that, you'll wake up.
And my recommendation for patients for that was, you know, to have the handful of almonds or a chunk of cheese or just some little bit of protein before bed, a small amount, just to kind of stabilize that blood sugar, you know, to hopefully reduce that risk of having a spike.
Yes. While they can figure out which of the three organs that control blood sugar are off, right? So your blood sugar is controlled between your adrenal gland, your pancreas, and your liver. It's a triad, right? There's, for normal blood sugar regulation, all three of those have to be functioning normally. And so if it really is a blood sugar issue and your blood sugar is going too low in the night, figuring out what's going on, and it could be one of those three or combination, you know, it is a triad, could be hormonal as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Something that helps with the cortisol and, you know, blood sugar management is magnesium.
Yes. Yeah. Magnesium is actually necessary inside cells to use the glucose within the cell properly. And magnesium, as we know, there's decent evidence for magnesium for sleep and helping people sleep through the night. And there's a lot of different magnesiums out there. And I think the one that can combine kind of two sleep supports into one is magnesium glycinate.
Oh, because of the glycine.
You got it. Yep. So magnesium is always going to be bound to something. So it may as well be something useful. So there's magnesium. There's all sorts of magnesiums out there. There's magnesium taurate. There's magnesium aspartate. There's magnesium citrate, right?
And really, the aspartate is with the excitatory.
Exactly. So you don't want magnesium aspartate, because when that magnesium, whatever it's bound to, and the fancy word we use for when a mineral is bound to something is whatever that mineral is chelated to, whatever it is bound to, it will break apart. So you have just magnesium, and then you'll have this other molecule. So in the case of magnesium glycinate, that other molecule is glycine. Glycine promotes the production of GABA. Again, GABA is gamma aminobutyric acid, and it's calming. And magnesium, of course, has its own net effect that helps with sleep, both to calm the muscles as well as help make proper neurotransmitters and use glucose, sure, within cells.
And an interesting thing about GABA is a lot of people say that if you take it orally, it's not going to cross the blood-brain barrier, but it does affect GABA. There's GABA production in the gut.
That's true. Yeah. And it's funny because, yeah, everything I read talks about how GABA doesn't cross the blood-brain barrier, but I do have patients that swear that it helps them sleep. So it's one of those kind of reconciling the data with what I observe clinically.
I worked with a psychiatrist at the cancer center, and he would recommend it for his patients. And he was the one who was talking about that, you know, the effects on the gut can actually be beneficial for anxiety, you know, even though there's no information about it crossing the blood-brain barrier.
Yes. And there was that great book that was first published in 1999 called The Second Brain, right?
Ooh.
It was all about all of the neurotransmitters in the brain being produced by the GI tract. And I will repeat, that was 1999. Of course, the author's name is escaping me at the moment, but definitely ahead of his time.
I mean, there's so much more that I feel like I can talk about with sleep, but we only have so much time. So there's one more thing I want to add where, you know, I'll be with a patient and we'll kind of go through everything, sleep hygiene, everything that we, you know, we cover, and there still are issues with sleep. Sometimes I'll turn to Chinese medicine, and I didn't study Chinese medicine except for what was, you know, required classes in school. Mm-hmm. So I call it Chinese medicine of convenience because it's the stuff that I remember and I'll just pull out of a hat. So in traditional Chinese medicine, there is a clock, and each one of the time periods correlates with an organ or organ system. And so for people who wake between the hours of 1 and 3 a.m., mm-hmm. that's liver time. And so I start to think about, like, you know, what's, you know, the liver burden, the detoxification that's, you know, going on, mm-hmm. not like a detox, but just like, you know, what burden is put on the liver through what the treatments or whatever is going on with the patient specifically. Another aspect of liver is anger. And so that's because I don't necessarily do counseling, but that's a really good way of kind of tying in, like, is there some anger issues that you might need to help, you know, manage that might okay. be affecting you?
Yeah.
Again, you know, this is just my way of thinking. I don't necessarily talk to patients about it, but it's just kind of like in the back of my mind, you know, mm-hmm. the other organ system that I look to, or the organ that I look to, is lung. And so the hours between 3 and 5, if a patient wakes between the hours of 3 and 5 a.m., then that's correlated with lung. And so that could be issues, you know, like respiratory issues, allergies, and the emotion that's tied with lungs, according to Chinese medicine, is grief.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so anger and grief are two emotions that are very familiar to us as, you know, cancer patients, cancer survivors.
Mm-hmm. So would you say that that would be a lead in to the conversation you then have with the patient, and just kind of, you're just more aware of that as a possible psychological aspect?
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly. Yeah. I realize, like, you know, we haven't covered every cause of sleep issues. I mean, there are, well, we covered hot flashes in our very first pod. Mm-hmm. You know, those can definitely cause sleep issues, but then there are other things, you know, neuropathy we've briefly mentioned. You know, from my experience, just after my mastectomy, just trying to manage sleep because of surgery, and, you know, other surgeries as well, cancers themselves, the tumor themselves, can cause issues with sleep, having an ostomy placed. I mean, there's so many other causes, and, you know, we weren't able to cover them all.
No, right. This is by no means an exhaustive podcast on sleep disturbances during cancer care or after. I mean, it's such a huge topic. We could probably dedicate quite a few of these on it.
Right.
All right. Well, that brings us to the end of this set of podcasts. So our third pod in our series. And we like to do our moment of woo. So what do we have this time?
Today's moment of woo is counting sheep.
I like that.
We've all heard that, right? Yeah. It's like the do people even say old wives' tale anymore? It's an old wives' tale. You can't go to bed. You count sheep. Have you ever tried counting sheep, Tina?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And how did it work for you?
It worked.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Well, okay. So here's what I found, because my brain was too simple. So I had to make it more complicated. And I just took numbers and started to count backwards by sevens from 999. And that puts me to sleep.
Okay. Now, so I have tried counting backwards as well. I've also tried to count sheep. Counting sheep didn't really work for me. And the counting backwards, I kept waking up like around 85. I would just count. I would not skip numbers. I would just kind of go straight. And around 85, I'd like start to fall asleep. And then I'd wake up and I'd be like, where'd I leave off? 199. I'd start again. But there was a study actually looking at, does counting sheep help? And it was found to not be helpful.
I wonder, I don't understand the compliance. Like, how do you know people did it? Like,
they were told to do it. There was a group that was told nothing. There was another group that was, I believe, told to visualize something, like a relaxing scene. Like if you enjoy being on the beach, you know, picture yourself being on the beach. And I could not access the full study. I do not have access to it.
That's one they definitely want to put behind a paywall.
Yeah, for sure.
You can't let that kind of stuff out there.
You cannot let, no, because I mean, there are mattress companies depending on the counting of the sheep.
Yes.
But yeah, I guess the people who counted sheep, it actually took them longer to fall asleep. And I don't know if it's because they would lose count and then they have to start again. Okay, sheep, get back in line.
Did they do a personality check? The perfectionists, they're like, oh, I'm not counting right. They're getting all like, anxious about the counting sheep.
Well, yeah, it can create anxiety. And that's the whole point, is to decrease the anxiety.
Right.
And so, yes, picturing a relaxing scene was participants were found to fall asleep 20 minutes sooner when they used visualization as opposed to the sheep counters.
Okay.
So,
well, that makes sense. Oh, you know, I forgot to mention, you know, there are some podcasts out there that help you fall asleep.
I hope it's not ours. Well, because yeah, there are apps and podcasts that help you fall asleep. Absolutely. Yeah.
They'll read some really kind of boring story in a monotone voice, and you find the one that works for you, and it can help. And you can set podcasts to go off in like 15 or 20 minutes or whatever you want. So anyways,
that's a perfect way to wrap up.
Yeah.
By the way, there are podcasts that help you go to sleep.
On that note, good night.
As we tuck you in, thank you for listening.
Just feel yourself relaxing into the bed.
Oh, I forgot to mention the song.
Oh, the song. Okay. Well, that's going to wake people up, but okay, go.
It will, because it's a jangle pop, jangle rock. It is a song called I Can't Sleep, and it's by The Laws. But I will put that video up on Pinterest and I will add it to our Spotify list.
Perfect. Thank you for doing that.
Sure. And thank you all for staying awake during this episode about sleep.
Yeah, you could now remember to like us, put us as subscribes, because you can come back here and you can fall asleep to this very podcast whenever you need.
That's right. That is right. And please leave reviews and rate us and all of that fun stuff. Share this with your friends. Share this with people that you think might benefit from the information that we are putting out there.
Yeah, every little bit does help. Helps us get the word out. And that's our goal, really.
And on that note, I'm Dr. Leah Sherman.
And I'm Dr. Tina Kayser.
And this is the Cancer Pod.
Until next time.